The Law as Teacher, Commentary for the October 17, 2020 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like someone who looks at his face in a mirror and after looking at himself, goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. James 1, verses 22 through 24. According to popular understanding, the Bible begins with the first five books, or Pentateuch, Genesis to Deuteronomy, often attributed to Moses. Modern textual examination has revealed a much more nuanced understanding, but the implications are the same, that nothing biblical was written down from Adam until Moses. There are ancient texts from other civilizations that echo some of what we find in Genesis. The Hebrews, however, were portrayed as semi-nomadic shepherds who may have relied on oral contracts witnessed by others in ceremonies and oaths. There may have been little need seen for writing things down. But as lifespans grew shorter and witnesses were no longer around to testify concerning those contracts, the need for written contracts may have become clear. The sojourn in Egypt may have reinforced that need. During the late 4th millennium BC, the Egyptians developed hieroglyphic writing that evolved from printing to script long before the wandering Hebrews came into the country. In a story that parallels Daniel's later experience in Babylon, Joseph, taken into Egypt as a captive, eventually rises to prominence, no doubt being educated in the ways of the Egyptians, including writing, in the process. Other Hebrews likely emulated him and tried to repeat what measure of success he had enjoyed. But as the conditions changed, so did their circumstances. These new harsh circumstances, intended to curb Hebrew influence in Egypt, instead made it possible for a small child, Moses, to be taken into the heart of Pharaoh's court and be raised and educated as an Egyptian, a second Joseph in a way. Losing favor, he eventually fled Egypt to return decades later to free the Hebrews from what had evolved into enslavement. Chastened with an apocalyptic onslaught of plagues, Pharaoh agreed to set the people free. Finally delivered from his grasp at the parting of the sea, they arrived in what is present-day Sinai as a mob, and Moses set about creating order through the methods the Egyptians used. He published edicts, many of which are preserved in the Pentateuch. The people did not all calmly submit to these laws. Those with more social status and wealth may have been educated in writing as well, and on that basis challenged the authority of Moses to be sole lawgiver. But Moses survived those challenges and brought the people to Sinai. There, according to the biblical account, he was given stone tablets engraved with the Ten Commandments. This law, foundational to three of the world's great religions, became a focal point for all who would come to God. It seems important then to divine its purpose. This is especially true since one of those religions, Christianity, now teaches that the Ten Commandments is no longer relevant because of grace. In the very heart of the commandments may be found a clue as to God's intent. The fourth commandment, the one about the Sabbath, begins with the word remember. That tells us that something has been forgotten. As we read the commandments, we can see that in comparison with society today, many have forgotten the words of those statutes or no longer care about them. That word remember tells us that it must have been like that in Moses' day as well. From Cain's violation of the commandment about murder to Judah's violation of the commandment about adultery, the history of mankind was and still is condemned by the law of God. Some may, through force of will, try to keep the commandments, But even if they manage to observe the letter of the law, they still stand condemned once they understand the law's spirit. The first four commandments are grounded in the need to love God with all our heart, mind, and soul. The last six are based on loving our neighbor as we love ourselves. Christ pointed this out on several occasions, and still we struggle to reach that level of understanding. The sad truth is, some may have strength of will to outwardly keep the commandments, yet not have an ounce of love in their hearts for God or their fellow man. These keep the commandments literally, but as a burden, and inwardly lament the load they must carry to do so. Jesus offered a way out for these people when he said, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." This implies that the law was never intended to elicit a heroic expenditure of willpower for one to be considered faithful. No, it was only meant for one thing, to condemn us, to point out how far we have wandered from what we were created to be. Some, upon reading it, will go, "Meh," and walk away, forgetting at once that there was anything to condemn them in their life walk. But some will read the words, see the righteousness in those laws, and feel condemnation in their hearts for a life poorly lived. Unable to live with the dissonance of that, they will seek answers. Those are hearts that God can speak to. The law was never intended to save anyone. If it were, there would have been no need for hundreds of thousands of animals to die as part of the Old Testament sacrificial system. From the beginning, it was not provided as a way to salvation, but as an educational tool to show us our need of saving. Even the sacrificial system was, in the end, not able to save the lost. It also served as an educational tool that coming back into harmony with God and our fellow man requires a shedding of blood. Not the blood of animals, and not our blood, but the blood of the Son of God was to make it possible. Some would have us believe that since we now have Christ's blood for our failings, we no longer need the law. But they do not realize that doing away with the law means doing away with the need for grace. For what purpose does grace have without the condemnation of the law? And if grace no longer exists, then Christ died in vain. For his death is the engine of grace. If Christ died in vain, how miserable is our lot, for what hope do we have then in the face of the law? Perhaps, therefore, some walk away after seeing the law. Without Christ, there is no hope, and without Christ, they trust in the only thing left to them, themselves. This can result in attempting to self-medicate the guilt away with alcohol, drugs, or anything else that can provide some temporary endorphins. In the strength of youth, many fantasize about the endless realization of hope they expect to experience once they are out on their own and can make their own choices about life. But with years and experience comes a realization that we do not conquer life. Instead, it conquers us and often leaves us wounded and bleeding, wondering what happened. We intended for everything to go so well. Even if we can clearly see where we went off the path, there are no do-overs. As we lay on our beds at night, tossing and turning, unable to sleep, these things come to us and remind us of our poor choices. Very few who have many years under their belts can sleep like a baby. They have been through too much, seen too much. This is especially true for those of us who have been to war. We know firsthand what has been lost from our innocence and how dearly we would like to have it back. But just as the scars in Jesus' hands and feet remind us of the price he paid for our salvation, our own scars remind us of the price we paid before finally coming to realize our need of him. Our scars and our best efforts can only bring us so far. They can bring us to the law, where we can clearly see those scars in the law's mirror. Chastened by our failings, we may then turn to God for healing. The love in the law points us there. The love of God then deals with the condemnation we feel. and it will do so for every moment we want it for the rest of our lives. Each time we ask, God will write a little more of that law and the love it reveals into our hearts. Perhaps you have not read God's law before. It can be found in Exodus chapter 20 or Deuteronomy chapter 5. Read it and see if you find the mirror that reveals your need of Jesus. If you do, he is ready to receive your heart and waits for you to invite him into your life. It may be the best thing you have ever done. It was for me. Thank you for listening to this commentary. May God bless you and your family. You can find other commentaries and the scripture footnotes for this commentary at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com.